Hello, it's Kathy with Journey into Cybersecurity. I have a lovely guest with me today. Her name is Adrienne George. Hey, Adrienne, how are you?
Hey, how's it going?
I am very well, thank you. It's Friday afternoon before Thanksgiving, so it's a good day to kind of wrap up the work week and really kind of focus on what's important. And I cannot wait to share your story with our audience because there's nobody else like you. There's nobody else who does what you do, who has the insights that you do, and who can help the world like you do. So I am super excited to kind of put a little spotlight on you, your mission, your vision, and so forth. So let's just go dive right in. But how about you introduce yourself a little bit?
Sure. So I'm Adrienne George. I'm the founder of My Cyber Exec. We are an HR business partner focused on helping companies retain that cyber talent that they've spent so much time recruiting. So I'm really big on learning and development, professional development, you know, employee engagement, and, you know, what can we do to keep people in the field long term, because cybersecurity is national security. So, you know, I fundamentally believe that, and I think it's incredibly important that we focus on it.
So, such a strong statement to start with, right? Cybersecurity is national security. This day and age, there's so much geopolitical chaos around us. And I think cybersecurity is becoming more front and center in these conversations. So I'm glad that we're immediately talking, addressing the elephant in the room here. What prompted you to create My Cyber Exec?
Well, you'll start to see my bias as to why I say cybersecurity is national security, right? So I worked in the intelligence community for over 15 years. So I spent a lot of time, you know, studying our adversaries. And when I left DC and moved to Charlotte, I wanted to create something that would have that impact that I saw that was sorely needed. And, you know, I had the opportunity to excel, as we used to say, many times in government. And one of the things I saw was that, you know, personnel, particularly for cyber across the public and private sector, is just, it's something that is a huge gap. And the White House has recognized it. There's a cyber workforce strategy out now. Yeah. Because again, you can't do, we focus a lot on the technical solutions in cyber. You want to buy a solution. Well, and we forget that you need a person for the most part to kind of install it, configure it, do all that fun stuff. So I'm just really passionate about, you know, getting people into the field. I think it's incredibly interesting. And it's incredibly broad. And I try to educate folks through my work with My Cyber Exec on where they might fit, because I think there's a lot of assumptions about the skills that you need to get into the field, or the skills that are required to get into the field. And I just love the myth busting part of it. So that's why I started my company.
Yes. And a lot of myth busting will happen right here today. Because I honestly believe, and I think that's at the core of a problem statement, is the wrong assumptions are being made. There are too many misunderstandings that have to be addressed to solve a bigger problem. Yeah, I think that's an important thing to say. Would you say anything else in terms of what's the problem statement around the current situation?
I think there are some artificial barriers to entry for some folks who wanted to get into the field. I also think, you know, part of that is just the explosive demand and need for cyber staff. And so that's feeding kind of a negative feedback loop in terms of the ability for companies to train and develop those employees. Mm-hmm. You know, they need plug and play, and we don't have enough plug and play. Mm-hmm. And we're still kind of in that mindset. And so I think that's one of the barriers. Another one, you know, might be degree requirements or certification requirements. I've done some work with some organizations on figuring out how to describe the actual skills that are needed for these jobs. Some of them are technical, but many of them are not. Mm-hmm. And so that's the myth busting that I do is one of my favorite presentations to give at universities is just that. It's, hey, like, let's talk about your durable skills. Let's talk about those customer service skills, right? Or your negotiation skills, your analytical skills. None of those are, you know, require degrees or even are, they're a part of some degree programs, but, you know, fundamentally you need to prove that you can use them. And I think those get lost in the mix because they're not as easily measurable, particularly from an HR perspective or a hiring perspective, as mm-hmm. saying, okay, well, they've earned this certification or they've earned this degree, so therefore, you know, they are qualified.
Yeah. And I know that you go to a lot of universities and colleges to support raising awareness on and helping them with career advice for cybersecurity. And I thought it was interesting how you identified that some schools look at cybersecurity in a more technical fashion and others more in a business fashion and put it under the business administration domain versus the technical domain. Yeah. What's your take?
I think, you know, I think we need both, right? We need a diversity of programs dependent on kind of what an individual is really interested in. If they're on a strong technical track, then and want to do research and you know, all those things that we definitely need them to do, then I think picking a technical program that's essentially nested within a comp sci type degree is great. But what I think we forget about sometimes is that cyber is a business enabler. You know, cyber enables a business to survive. And that sounds dramatic, but I don't really know another way to put it. Like if you have a ransomware incident or something like that, you as a business cannot function. You cannot make money. You might not be able to pay your employees. And a lot of small businesses close as a result of a cyber incident. So I think understanding where your work fits within the broader enterprise is incredibly important. And I love that, you know, some universities here in North Carolina are taking that approach as well.
Yeah, I thought that was fascinating. And I think there's also an evolution in the educational space where it used to be just the fundamentals on a technical level. They learned networking and computing and cloud configurations and architecture and all that jazz. And yes, that's fundamentally important to understand. But at the same time, like you said, it is a business function as well. And more, I'm seeing that in my role in a software service provider where we're helping CISOs, organizations manage cybersecurity risk from the top down, trying to educate their leadership. And so the need to have that acumen, that language to speak to a leadership function about cybersecurity and cybersecurity risk in a way that makes sense to them and a way that compels them to invest in all of that, all of the functionality that goes into cybersecurity management is huge. And I feel like there's still a huge gap in that pipeline development, whether it's educationally or within an organization or just in general. What do you think?
I would agree. And I think it has downstream effects when you keep cyber IT siloed within a business. Because if you're really trying to design secure software or to ensure that everybody accepts responsibility for, you know, the cybersecurity posture of the organization, if you keep it over here in this little room that, you know, everyone says, well, we don't talk to those folks, or, you know, or we don't understand, or that's too hard. Because I think the analogy I use is cyber is like the new math. Everyone's like, oh, I can't do math. Well, now it's all I can't do cyber, right? You know, we need everybody in the business to fundamentally understand, you know, what networking looks like, example, but you need some cross-pollinization. And so I think if we can start with, you know, undergrads and kind of giving them some exposure to core business concepts, so they at least have the language, right? Because a lot of this is, you know, one organization speaking French and the other one speaking Greek, and yeah. they there's it's just very difficult, right, to meet in the middle when you don't have a common language. So I think that's one of the things I love, like I said, about some of the universities nesting their cyber programs within their business schools is they're starting it early, right? They're starting that thought process early.
Yeah, it's so critical because the legal role in an organization also plays a big role in this whole mix of things, right? They're the ones saying, you need to meet these frameworks. You have to be compliant with this. This is our potential risk in terms of liability with our clients, with our partners, if we are not meeting these requirements that are in our contracts. So legal is also becoming more involved in cyber. Mm-hmm. So I presume all that kind of fits together then if you put it in the business domain. Right.
Absolutely. And so one of the best resources that I give out when I talk about this is the NICS DHS website, because there's a beautiful graphic that they've done, which kind of highlights the cyber enablers that they're, and it's a little hard to describe, you know, on a podcast, but the cyber enablers are sort of purple on this graphic at the bottom. And they do include things like your budget people, in some cases, your legal, mm-hmm. your strategic comms. Because at a certain point, cyber is touching all aspects of your business. And again, there's cross-pollinization is absolutely required. You need that cross-functionality and understanding and common language to make the business successful.
Yeah. Now let's talk about people management. I feel like the people story needs work in cybersecurity. So what's your vision for the HR function, the people management function in an organization?
Yeah, I'll just start with a positive, right? So one of the really cool things to come out of the White House strategy, I thought, was the funding for SHRM, which is an HR association that it's very well respected. We all go to training, we rely on the resources. And so I think the need to make sure that HR has that common language and understands the career pathways is incredibly important because, again, growth in this field has been explosive. It's not for lack of trying, but it's just a numbers game when all of a sudden you have all these requisitions to hire for, you're like, oh no. And so unfortunately, if you don't have the tools to do that, you're not going to be able to benefit from some of the best practices. And so, I think, again, because of that negative feedback loop I was talking about, hiring for experience, you need people to be plug and play. You're not necessarily taking the long-term view of that employee. Mm-hmm. And so you get burnout. And, I think it's unfortunate because you can spend so much money just hiring and replacing them. Some numbers I've seen are $15,000. When somebody departs to then hire and train and onboard and give that person 3 months of kind of minimal productivity just to kind of get them up to speed. But that's a lot of cash investment. And mm-hmm. if you have people, leaving every year, every 2 years, you're spending a significant amount of money. So I think, in terms of processes, what I advocate is that, folks slow down to the extent that they can, businesses can't stop. And do some investment on the front end just to think about their top three. What do you actually need? Mm-hmm. What is it that your business actually needs to succeed right now? And I think then you can go out and find a lot of solutions to that. You can hire somebody full time. You can have them on contract. You can do a lot of stuff. There's a lot of options available to businesses now. And sort of start like that. And then I think you're going to need to take a look at your actual business goals, right? Or what's your strategic plan? You've got a 5-year strategic plan, which none of us can really stick to for 5 years, but you have to have a plan, right?
Yeah.
And then think through what that means in terms of your hiring and start early in building those relationships with folks to understand what the field looks like. And it's kind of daunting. If you're already, if the cyber is math, right? what do these words mean? This whole new vocabulary that I have to learn as an HR professional, what is expected? What does that person expect when I hire them, mm-hmm. their career path? What do they need to be current on their certifications or just to keep up with the field? Because it's a continuous learning environment. You cannot mm-hmm. go to school, get a degree and be done. And so there are a lot of, I think, complex factors in managing this that are pretty daunting. So what you see happen sometimes is, well, I'm just going to copy and paste a job post that looks like this position, and then I'm just going to go hire for that.
So that's where that's coming from.
Yeah, I think, you know, in some cases that it is. There's resources out for that as well. CompTIA does a nice job of putting out tons of great resources for hiring. But I think, again, ultimately, you know, it does come down to having a little bit of expertise on what it is that you actually need. If you're not familiar with some of those requirements and you put out that rec, you're already limiting your pool, right?
Yeah.
It is a challenging environment right now, I think, for HR and this field.
Yeah. So it sounds like HR people need support from both the hiring managers, but also from the cybersecurity domain to kind of help them, educate them about what all these acronyms mean. You know, a CISSP means X amount of years of work experience and other certifications and degrees. It's not just an easy thing to achieve. And HR managers probably don't know this, that all that goes into that little five-letter acronym.
Yeah, I mean, 5 years of experience, but, you know, frankly, kind of years of experience.
Yes.
Into that, probably, not to mention the hours of study. So, you know, that's, I don't want to say it's like a cyber master's, but it's very, you know, it is a very challenging certification to get. And I think the lack of understanding might lead a little bit to like the lack of respect for it, right? Like it is not well understood.
Right. So that's why you are there to kind of be a resource to HR managers, because, you know, the hiring managers are already trying to squash fires and answer million-dollar questions and just probably doing more than one job at the same time. So having that advisory resource such as yourself, I think could be so instrumental in really changing this equation where entry-level job applicants just keep running into these barriers of entry that you were speaking of before. And I keep saying, you know, maybe it's not just, I think I always say on this podcast, there isn't per se a talent gap. I think there are plenty of people looking to get into cybersecurity and even having a skill set and a set of experience where, like you talked about, those durable skills or transferable skills, you know, that could really be leveraged in the domain. I keep saying, I don't think it's a talent gap. I think it's a process gap. It's more like a pipeline, the supply chain of cybersecurity people in the domain, I think, needs to be improved. And I think we need guidance. I think people need that extra support, that hand holding. How do you propose to support HR people to build a more resilient cyber workforce?
Well, I think it starts kind of initially with a recognition of a sort of the operating understanding and constraints, you know, that they're under, you know, what they need, what their budget is, and essentially what the goals are for the position. And because, you know, I think we have to remember too, like these professionals are, they want to get somebody in the door, right? They want to help. Their own internal performance metrics are based on some of that too, right? Getting someone in the door. those are their KPIs and OKRs. And so the system in some ways is not conducive to slowing down a little bit. And so in terms of support I offer, it's just more, it's that counseling, right? It's, hey, let's take a look at that. Let's take a look at your goals and see if what this position that you say that you need is actually going to meet your goals. Are you hiring the right person? Do you need to hire somebody full time right now? Mm-hmm. Can we find you that expertise on a fractional basis? Because there is a really good community here in North Carolina of fractional CIOs and fractional CISOs.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, in some cases, that's my recommendation is, hey, like, how about you bring somebody in with like the business slash technical experience to help you build out a program versus send out a requisition for somebody, you know, with the CISSP and, but pay them entry level salary because you don't quite understand the market. And I think, you know, consulting is kind of like that, right? It's about identifying problems, coming up with a range of options and solutions and really fundamentally understanding your customer and their operating kind of assumptions and constraints. Cause we have to live in the real world, right? As much as I would, you know, like to kind of, make the perfect cybersecurity hiring process, you know, we have to, I think, work within, kind of the world that we live in.
I like that. That's really good. I know that you provide also advisory services to job seekers, right?
Yeah.
So what are some of the advice that you give to them, whether it's resume writing, interviews, certifications to pursue, things like that?
Yeah, I think not to discount those durable skills, right? But to be as specific as possible as they can be on their resume about how they have used those skills to further the cybersecurity field, right? Or in a particular project. I speak with a fair amount of students who feel like they don't have any experience, even though they've done some internships. And I think some of that's a product of the job market just being really tough for them right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when we really start to break down some of those experiences and they think through kind of how to talk about them, and measure them, because that's another hard thing to do. Mm-hmm. But you know, HR on the other side is looking for impact and results because they want to understand that you will be a benefit to the business, and that they will be able to rely on those on that degree, right? So you have to translate those skills mm-hmm. that you've developed into a degree to the business, and you know that's another bonus for you know kind of cybersecurity programs sitting within business schools, because sometimes when I see the technical resumes, you don't necessarily see what the value is.
Mm-hmm.
That skill, it's impressive. It's, you know, I could never do some of those things. But, you know, the person on the other side may, reading your resume initially, may not have that experience. And so you have to really walk them through why they want to hire you. This is your brand. Mm-hmm. This is why they should bring you on board. And this is the value that you will add to the organization. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that's some of the biggest pieces of advice I give them, just the specificity and the results. You can't beat it in either the interview or the resume.
Yeah. Yeah. What I do is I, with personally, with every experience, I share what lessons did I learn mm-hmm. in a summary statement, because every experience is a little bit different. And just the macro lessons are important because it kind of accumulates your perspective and your ability to support a broader organization. Now, what about the CISO? I feel like we're at a tipping point where, you know, the people who are in a chief information security officer role, originally came from a technology track. They grew up in IT and then cybersecurity just was slapped onto their list of things to do. And then they just grew in responsibilities and boom, they were tagged CISO. But I feel like the CISO is going through more challenges, is being pushed to now speak to that leadership more and more in that business language. What's the CISO of the future going to look like to you?
Yeah, well, what I hope or what they are, I don't know. But I'll talk about what I hope that they're going to look like. And I think you're absolutely right. I'll say that right off the bat. I was at the UNC Charlotte conference this fall, which for folks in North Carolina who are able to go, it's a fantastic conference. They do a great job.
Mm-hmm.
But I went to several panels on cyber leadership. And there was a fantastic panel there that had two CISOs and one board member. And what they talked about was the relationship between the two, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're from company that has a board, right, that's, you know, set up that way, I think it's maybe a surprise when you go in at the entry level to understand that your CISO has to answer questions that are less technical than maybe you anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of lessons there for entry-level professionals that you need to start to figure that out, to gather that information, to understand what metrics are important to senior leadership pretty early on in your career so that you can start to manage your own communications up the chain. I think that will set you apart. But I think the CISO of the future is going to have that business savvy. They're going to have to understand, P&L sheets and, investments and, the strategic business plan, right? Where is the company going over the next few years? Because the questions from the board aren't going to be, related to, what software that they're purchasing, for the most part. The board is more going to be more concerned with, are they secure and how they're going to identify metrics to prove that or not, or disprove it. Right. And it is, I think, a fundamentally different concept than a lot of people who grew up in to be CISOs learned about. And I think, the stories that I've heard, anecdotal, they're mostly about growing up within the role, getting the OJT kind of leadership and management training. And what I like to advocate for, as an HR professional, is that we start to train people, even at the entry level, that you can lead from where you are. There's a lot of material out there about that particular philosophy in management and leadership. So, I encourage people to kind of go and research it. But it's really about taking responsibility, taking action where you can make a difference and improve. And then I think as you continue that up the chain, you start to develop different skills. Some of those durable skills that we kind of mentioned earlier, your communication, your presentation skills, your briefing, your analytical skills that are going to serve you really well in leadership roles. Because fundamentally, as soon as you take that first leadership / management job, your job is now about people. It is not about what you can do technically. And I think we're still in that evolution and in some companies, but I firmly believe that that is the mentality that we should start to develop quickly.
Well, let's talk about that. So the CISOs are being challenged more and more to be able to prove to the board, but also to prove to regulators, whether it's in the United States or beyond, that they are doing their best to actually protect the interests of the investors and all stakeholders of that organization. So I feel like that is definitely also driving that evolution, right, of the CISO role.
Right. I mean, if the CISO can go to jail, then it's pretty fundamental, I think, that they have a seat at that proverbial table to, influence, to provide advice directly to the CEO and the board, frankly, because I think, all those things are captured. And from a legal and compliance standpoint, it's incredibly important that all that be documented.
Yeah. So this will definitely challenge corporate culture, right? Because some organizations are still run by the same people now than 20 years ago. So, some of the leadership figures, are probably well in their 60s and are comfortable where they are. But the reality of cybercrime and even cyber warfare is really challenging the resilience of their organization and themselves in terms of being able to empower their CISO and understand cyber risk themselves, because now they too are being held accountable almost equally as the CISO, right? So I feel like the culture itself, corporate level wise, or any organization, right, the public sector is equally vulnerable to that, has to really happen. So it's not just up to the CISO to grow up to be more of a business leader. It's also up to the business leadership to empower the CISO to have a voice and to have a seat at the table and to get the funding they need to be successful in their role, right? So it's a very important collaboration. I don't know how that's looking now today in most organizations. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't, you know, have my finger on any metrics that I don't think would be particularly helpful there. And I think you're right. The evolution can be slow. And some folks like to go through what I call experiential learning, right? So you yeah. have an issue and then you go, oh, wait, maybe we should change.
Yes.
That might be the American way. But it's, you know, I think corporate structures can be tricky, right? Mm-hmm. And finding out what's best and what ultimately allows the business to succeed. You know, there's going to be some trial and error there, but I think and advocate that a best practice is to have your CISO, you know, at the table.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think contributes to a slower adoption on the HR side, or maybe even the higher management side, of, you know, a better way of hiring and just people management overall? It's not just the intake, it's also the retention, because there's a huge retention problem as well, because you were just talking about how overworked people are. What contributes to that slow adoption, you think?
I think there's still some assumptions. You can buy a solution, right? You can sign up for a particular HRIS or a software, we'll just say software solution that's going to essentially be your silver bullet for hiring and learning and development and all those things, right? HR and cyber are similar in some ways in that they are business enablers. They don't generate funds. So
yeah,
we pinch pennies sometimes in areas where it doesn't, it's pound foolish, right? That's the expression. So, and you know, it's not, it wasn't surprising to me when a lot of the tech layoffs started that some of the first people to go were the recruiters and the HR.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. When the wave started, I, you know, it might be sort of the bias in my feed, but I noticed quite a few. Mm-hmm. And I wondered, you know, in 3 years' time or 2 years' time when they're rebuilding, you know, now you've got to go and rehire HR people.
So, yeah, that's not good.
I don't, you know, it's just an unfortunate part of kind mm-hmm. of how our cycles work. And I think the interest in creating, I think from an HR professional, you'll hear them talk about these things, right? Learning and development, we need to invest in people, we need to do this. But I talk again about working in reality, and there are, you know, budgetary realities that we have to deal with. And I think it's about figuring out where you can invest. And, you know, HR advisory is a little different. In my world, I'm unique. A lot of HR advisory services are more your HR generalists, right? You outsource the HR of your company, payroll, your policies, that sort of thing to a company to kind of handle for you, maybe even kind of your performance management system. But I'm a little different. And because I am so focused on this field, cyber tech and IT and retention and getting people into the field, you know, those are not my priorities. I can do payroll for you, but I would prefer to figure out how you can hang on to that person that you're paying. Mm-hmm. I want them to be happy at your company, and I want them to grow with you, because institutional knowledge, I think, is important.
Huge.
Yeah. And I think we accept there's a level of turnover. We accept that sometimes professional mm-hmm. growth requires that people get it on the outside. But what I advise is, hey, wouldn't you like for them to come back to you and be your cybersecurity director one day? So how mm-hmm. can you make this work for them so that they are a promoter for you, right? We talk mm-hmm. about employee engagement versus, I would never work for them again because they denied every training opportunity. They asked me to do way too much. They were trying to save so much money by making me do three jobs. And that's an unfortunate reality for some companies, but I think the ones that are doing it right have figured out that investing in people actually saves them money over the long run.
Yeah. And, you know, this is super interesting because maybe HR, that function itself, people management, is an undervalued function and should be higher up in the hierarchy. I don't know where HR really sits in many organizations, but when I was going through my MBA program under Jack Welch, you know, he was saying the people officer should report to the CEO. Like, they should be aligned. Like you said, they should know what the strategy is of the business and go execute on that from a people perspective.
Yes.
That should be front and center. And so maybe it's not given the support and funding, just like cybersecurity is not getting, per se, the support and funding, as both are really central to the execution of a strategic objective.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm sympathetic to companies struggling with taking people offline to do the work that actually drives the business, to invest in them for training. And I think that, you know, that needs to be said, right? You're taking a loss that week, right? If they're mm-hmm. in a resource, right? If they're in training. But I think good managers understand how to make that work. Mm-hmm. And how to prioritize. And I think if all the way up the chain, it's understood and agreed upon that this is a strategic goal for the company, and we're going to have to accept that it's going to hurt this week to invest in that person for their leadership training, because it's going to pay dividends in their own ability to lead a team one day, or their ability to move up the chain and be a leader, you know, further on in the company.
Yeah.
But in the moment, right, in that tactical decision moment, when somebody mm-hmm. about to go on training on that Monday, and you say, "Oh, well, you have all these projects that are still due. Can you work on them while you're in training this week?" Oh. And I see so many people trying to juggle, and I think it takes away from the ability to actually learn those lessons.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the other challenge too is while it's not a bad thing for companies to promote from within, what tends to happen in those scenarios is it is technical proficiency that gets you that sort of initial jump into management. And then that person is sort of left to their own devices to figure out the people management part,
mm-hmm.
which feeds the retention, recruitment kind of cycle. Because number one, it's already a difficult transition to make when you go from colleague to manager.
Yeah.
But, you know, number two, you're going to make some mistakes along the way. And I speak from personal experience there. So it is something that I have felt. Those are mistakes that I have made. And, you know, I want to share those with folks so that, you know, we don't repeat them.
Yeah. And it was funny what you were just saying about, you know, the importance of training and continuing that growth professionally within your people structure. I was just listening to a podcast, Diary of a CEO, and he talks about a lot of neuroscience and all that jazz. And it was super interesting about the concept of habituation.
Mm-hmm.
They say it nicer than I did. But it was interesting how, you know, our minds hate our we just as human beings, we don't like to be bored. We don't like to be constantly doing the same thing. We need change. We need growth. We need ways to challenge ourselves, to get out of our comfort zone and to grow, to progress in one way or another. And that training, whether it's cybersecurity or leadership or whatever it may be a fantastic way to increase engagement again within your team. Mm-hmm. So really, you know, making them happy again by showing that you're investing in their development and in their personal growth. I think that it's a win-win for both, but perhaps it's not being seen that way. But that was a fantastic lesson I learned from that podcast today.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that takeaway mm-hmm. for sure.
So let's go to your government career, 15 years in DC. What was that like?
I survived.
So what role did you play and what led you there to begin with?
Yeah, I think like many folks of my age, I watched the towers fall on September 11th, mm-hmm. right? And it fundamentally changed my life. I was in a STEM field. I studied biology. You know, I have a Bachelor of Science in biology, was, you know, gung-ho to kind of do some research or maybe be a doctor. And you know, I spent a year studying abroad and from 99 to 2000 in Europe, and started to get like an introduction to the politics and things like that. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then I came home and, you know, September 11th, you know, happened. And I said, wow, like I need to do something. And that something for me was not, you know, I went through options, was not going to be like join the military. Although it's funny, I spent a lot of time working very closely with the military, mm-hmm. and really, really enjoyed it, and actually volunteer now, Operations Forces. So, it's, definitely part of my life that I didn't expect, but you know, things work out like they should. And like many people who moved to DC, I had no money and lived in a group house with some folks. And we were talking about the various fields. We were all interested in government. That's why most people moved to DC. And somebody talked to me about the Defense Intelligence Agency. And I said, wow, like I'd never heard of them. Not ashamed to admit. And I started learning more about their mission, which was to support the military. Obviously, we were engaged in a conflict overseas at that point in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And I applied and they found my background interesting and, got hired to be an analyst. And that's kind of like the beginning.
Nice.
You know, I really enjoyed my government career. I tell folks all the time interested in cyber who absolutely go and pursue a career in the government with cyber. You will do some crazy exciting things that you will never be able to do, in the industry. And you don't have to devote your whole life to it, right? You can, mm-hmm. serve your country for 5 years and have those exciting experiences and then decide, you know, if it's going to be for you, if you want to commit, or if you want to go and do something else. And I think, you know, the government's trying to be better about allowing people to come in and out, right? So you do 5 years, you go to industry, and then you come back. And so that, you know, kind of cross-pollination, I think, is incredibly important for innovation.
Yes.
But, you know, I really can't overstate like how incredible my experience was with the U.S. government. I feel so fortunate to have had that opportunity, and it wasn't something that I'd ever planned for myself.
That's just absolutely fascinating. What were some of the highs and the lows during those 15 years?
In NCTC, where I worked at the time, the National Counterterrorism Center, was a little bit like a startup sort of at the beginning. So it was very flat as an organization, and you had quite, you were able to kind of talk to a lot of different people that I don't, you know, hierarchically, bureaucratically, it may not have been something that you could have done in other organizations. Now it's changed somewhat, but it was a fun place to sort of be. And I think I was also given, had a lot of support from supervisors to pursue things that I found interesting. So in terms of just that, investment in me, they highly invested in me as an employee, and I, you know, I ran with it, learned as much as I could, and, you know, tried to contribute back that, that philosophy that I developed, which is that cross-functional pollinization. Like, we need to know things that are tangential to our daily work, because we need to know how that puzzle piece fits in with the rest of the national security apparatus. I think it fundamentally makes us, able to operate like much more efficiently. So
that really explains a lot in terms of how invested you are in veterans today. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about what you do with veterans.
So I volunteer with the Honor Foundation, which if your listeners haven't heard of it, go look it up now. But basically, it's for special operations forces who are transitioning out of service, right? So they've completed their tours, completed their service, and they are thinking through what the next steps in their own careers might be. And I had a fortuitous meeting with a gentleman in Fayetteville when I was there, and it was a funny connection. He knew of a friend of a friend, and it was like, oh, it was magic. And I was introduced to the program director there, and they run, mock interview panels, and they do resume reviews for veterans. And I was like, how perfect is this? This is what I do for a living. So I immediately was like, hey, like, you're speaking to my heart now. Like, let me help. You know, I've worked so closely with this community. And I understand at a different level, I think, what they're going through. To be honest, Kathy, like, as an intelligence professional, I did not envision seeing myself, you know, on LinkedIn as often as I am now, or talking to people as often as I do, right? It's not a career path where you're encouraged to really
you know,
make yourself public. So, and then, you know, from that perspective, even trying to translate my resume to something industry would understand, that was incredibly challenging, because government is not set up to make money, right? It is not set up to have those traditional measures that industry really recognizes as high performance. So how do you do that, right? And so that's one of the things I feel like I've been able to help out with the Honor Foundation. But just a fantastic organization. Really, I can't say enough good things about them.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Because veterans, they truly have already just their experience, but also the language, right? Just in national security, you know, they already go through certain things in their military careers that are very similar to what a CISO would be doing, as you know, in terms of cybersecurity, whether it's a risk analysis, open source intelligence gathering, understanding, you know, what is our most critical asset, how do we protect it? Things along those lines.
Some of the most adaptable and resilient people that you'll find. We talk about those durable skills. They have them, veterans, they just have them in droves because it's drilled into them. And so I think when I talk to them about pursuing cyber careers, it's more about bolstering some of the technical credentials and figuring out kind of where they fit, what industry they want to go into, because the field's so broad.
Yeah. So on one hand, we really have to instill that confidence in these individuals to believe that what they've done is already valuable in the private sector, but also vice versa, that the private sector recognizes the value that they can provide to their organization. So hopefully you can be that translator, that HR advocate for them in the field. And speaking about Fayetteville, I believe you're also an advisor at the local Fayetteville Technical Community College.
So I advised FTCC on the curriculum, and you know, I'm on the board at UNCW's, you know, cybersecurity CCDE. So it's you know, it's very gratifying. Like, I enjoy doing it because I think it helps. I can help shape the curriculum in some ways, or at least provide some advice on trends that I'm seeing. But ultimately, the goal is to get folks a job, right? Like, how are you going to get this degree? Because that is so frustrating. I see those stories where, oh, I went and I got my master's in cyber, or I got this degree, and now I can't get a job. And I just, it hurts my heart. Because I put in the time and the effort, and in some cases, the internships and the work, and it's still, the door is closed.
Yes. It's so challenging. About the educational system, well, if you could change anything, whether it's K through 12, you know, the younger ages, or beyond community colleges, universities, what would it be?
I'll start with universities, because I think, you know, K-12 has its own set of unique challenges based on, you know, state funding or state priorities, right? But I think, you know, at the university level, if I could change anything, it's really about the siloing. And a lot of it has to do with funding, right? Everything always goes back to budget. What are the funding streams? What are they dedicated for? And how protective are people of those funding streams? And, you know, that's a real world thing, right? Like, you won't have a program at the university if you don't have funding, and you have to hold on to it. And so I feel like I have seen some really positive changes in at some places in terms of their creativity in integrating with other parts of the university. And in some universities just haven't cracked that code yet. Mm-hmm. Or it's just too hard, or the systems are, they're too ingrained. And like you mentioned, some companies, you know, it's you know, universities kind of mirror that in some ways. And I think, you know, some of that will change when professors of practice perhaps are able to be advisors and can demonstrate and explain to somebody who's been in academia, mm-hmm. perhaps, hey, this is how it worked at my company. This is how it worked at my colleague's company. This is how it worked, you know, down the street. Yeah. Perhaps we should educate these folks or make a part of their degree program that they learn these other skills. And, you know, part of what I told, you know, some of the universities that I've been able to consult with is, I understand that you have very limited credit hours in terms of getting folks to graduate, and you really have to be selective yeah. about what you're offering them because you want the program to be successful. All I'm asking is that perhaps, like, if you're a liberal arts school, for example, one of those electives, you know, be really focused on X, Y, or Z. Just yeah. please make them do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't want to overprescribe what students are able to take because you want them to explore, right, in that liberal arts kind of context. But think about it that way. And then from the community college perspective, it's even more reduced, right? Because they're yeah. 2-year programs. They're got to be really efficient with that in terms of what you're selecting yeah. them to do. And so I think it's kind of that same mindset. How do you weave some of that information into existing coursework?
Right. And maybe develop a pathway where you can go in different directions. You start here, but then you can go into different directions, go to a next level up so mm-hmm. that you're not stuck just in that little thing, that box that you started in.
Right. Yeah.
Cause yeah, you're right. 2 years, that's not long enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And in cyber too, right. Once you're in it, like you said, you have to keep learning. Is there any advice that you would give other than everything we've already talked about to just keep learning? Is there any edge that is good to have these days?
I think communication skills will mm-hmm. set you far apart. The ability in particular to explain technical concepts to a non-technical audience, that is worth its weight in gold.
Yes.
The executive briefing styles, you know, kind of training yourself on how to give those briefings to seniors, how mm-hmm. to organize them, what's expected, and provide that, provide the recommendations in a very non-technical way. If that's not recognized and rewarded, like immediately, like I don't know what to tell you, but it's, you know, one of the things, I tell folks a lot of times in government, right. My last job was as acting deputy cyber executive, which is like a crazy title, but basically I didn't get that job because I was a cybersecurity expert. I got that job because of the durable skills that I have and mm-hmm. the awareness of the organization and my familiarness with how the intelligence community operated and how the policy community operated. And when, you know, we had crisis events, I'm in front of essentially government executives explaining what's going on. Mm-hmm. In a non-technical way, because if yeah. I started from a technical perspective, I would lose them.
Yeah.
It really is an incredibly valuable skill.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, just having the empathy to recognize that your audience is different, right? They have a different skill set than you, and mm-hmm. just being able to put yourself in their shoes. Well, if I don't speak their language, how are they going to feel? Right? Are they going to just shut down because they don't want to look like idiots? Are they going to just walk you out the room right away because you're making them look like an idiot?
Yeah.
And being able to speak their language and educate them with the respect that they definitely deserve, right? I think that is definitely huge. I couldn't agree more with what you just said. Let's talk about NatSec Girls Squat. It's a mouthful. It's one word.
Right.
What is it? What do they do?
So So I was lucky enough to kind of work with them to develop a cybersecurity careers working group the last couple of years. And their mission statement just really spoke to me. Just a quick kind of summary of it. It's they're building competent diversity in national security and defense to build more resilient, capable, and agile national security enterprises, right? So what does that mean to me? It's about getting people in the door, getting diverse voices into the door, breaking down some of those traditional barriers. Yeah. I can tell you, and you probably know this from experience, I walk into a lot of rooms where I'm the only woman and I have my entire career. I at a WSIS event, I think it was last year, we had sort of a gathering of women, and I found it interesting from a sociological perspective what happened when men would walk into the room. And I was like, I have that experience like all the time, like, and I have to adjust. Like, so, one of the things I love that NatSec Girl Squad does is it takes that national security focus, introduces women to one another who are in the field, and creates a space where they can, experiment with, different ideas, whether that be, do they want to go down a writing career path, policy advising? Do they need some help getting into a field? And what does that look like? Putting on events to just bring people together, because as we know, networking is incredibly important.
Huge.
When you're job seeking. So, if we don't know each other, we can't help each other. And so I love that about their mission.
Yeah. And I love that too. And plus it's so important to have good role models, mentors, people that you can look up to and say, well, if they can do it, then I can do it too. So as a girl, to me, that really is so important, that they have the right role models. So kudos to them for
the charge on that. Fantastic organization.
We have to talk about AI because everybody does.
This is but the AI moment.
AI is big in cybersecurity already. Like, it, at least what we call machine learning, right? Just having some functionality to remove some of the automated stuff that an individual shouldn't have to do, making the analysis more more important at the strategic level, but letting the computer stuff, the machine learning, kind of do all the analysis of event log data and just saying, hey, look at this stuff in particular. So, but AI also is becoming involved, a part in the HR role itself, right? So how do you think it's going to affect the human resources management element and in cybersecurity in particular?
I think they're kind of maybe two different things. From the cybersecurity perspective, I'll put on kind of the analyst hat, and I think it could be like incredibly useful in helping us sort through those proverbial reams of data that we're all struggling with, kind of how to parse out, how to draw conclusions from. I'm hopeful there that it'll, enable cyber defense, and just make us better, more agile. I think from the HR perspective, it gets a little tricky. Because there's a saying, in the military, garbage in, garbage out, that when you're talking about people, there's just so much opportunity for bias in the system. Yes. And we already know that there's some challenges there with, I think, when you talk about using it for the hiring process, just you have to be aware, particularly now that we're doing asynchronous interviews. Yes. And if you're trying to screen candidates initially, like before they talk to a human being, using an asynchronous interview where where it's trained to recognize facial expressions in a certain way that are probably not trained to the range of human expression. I worry that we're not anticipating the downstream effects. I think we talk about them. Oh, this is going to happen. But there is such a push again on the budgetary front to make a more efficient process that I worry that we're going to leave some folks behind unintentionally.
And those folks who may fall in the category of being neurodiverse, right? Is that the word?
I think so, yeah. Neurodivergent. Mm-hmm.
Definitely have a skill set, a strength that is unique to them. Mm. But they're not the extroverts. They're not expressive like what the technology may be looking for, like you said, and is excluding them from this entire process and is leaving, you know, very talented and uniquely skilled people, humans, yes. on the sidelines. I share that concern as well. You know, we have to remember the human qualities that set us apart, and everybody has unique strengths. And we have to really, like you said, garbage in, garbage out, look at the algorithm, who wrote the algorithm, what criteria are we really, really looking for? Does it really fit the skill set that we're looking for versus, you know, the perfect human being?
I don't want to go down the rabbit holes, but it's like, what's, we're putting a lot of faith and trust in the folks who are training these algorithms, the people I personally have not really met at these companies. And I don't feel as informed, mm-hmm. you know, as I would like to be on how exactly we're training these to ensure that we're not training biased models.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully people hear this and and accept the challenge to really challenge the process again in the people management and just the people story overall in general. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your purpose. What keeps you going?
The light bulb moments, right? You know, when I get an email from somebody who says, you know, I changed my resume and now I'm getting callbacks, or, you know, I joined this professional association and I used the tips that you gave me to start conversations, or, hey, your expertise like really got us through this, this moment that we were having in the hiring process. and just the thank yous are really gratifying. Small change, but it's very tactical and tangible change that I can see and feel, which is very different. From past lives where you're doing a lot of strategic work. And so it's just, I just, that ability to touch someone individually is great. Like I live for it.
Yeah. I share that same purpose and joy, you know, finding that fulfillment in helping others. And I think that really binds us in cybersecurity. I really see that as a common theme amongst the people who are working in this field and who are helping others succeed in this field. So it's a beautiful thing. So let's connect the dots a little bit, because we covered so much, right? We talked about the educational system, the hiring, the human resource management process. We talked about the elevated role of cybersecurity, the role of the CISO, the gaps in the process all along the line. Really just again talking about how the talent gap is something that we need to revisit as mm-hmm. you know, the problem word or statement of the day, and really challenge ourselves to ask ourselves, what assumptions am I making, what stereotypes do I have in my own head, what am I perhaps misunderstanding, or who am I misunderstanding, and how can I help? Because I think collectively we own this problem. There's not one person who can solve that, right?
No, absolutely not. Yeah. And I think you say it all the time, so I'm going to echo you as well. Like, you shouldn't have to break into this, right? Why are we, you know, setting up these barriers to make it difficult when there's such a need? And, you know, it's funny that the language around like getting that first job in the field has come to that. Yeah. And I think we need to invite people into cybersecurity because it's a party, right?
It is.
You're right. Like, the community is so welcoming, and it is one that I see that is really focused on mentoring and teaching and mm-hmm. and lifting folks up. But I, when you're on the outside before you've broken in, like, you don't know, it's like this little club and it doesn't need to be like the, you know, the VIP list, you know, red carpet, like it's, you know, all are welcome.
Yes. Yes. And we're all very humble because we know we're never done learning. We can't know it all. We need each other to beat the monsters out there that are really trying to mess life up for everybody.
So. Exactly. Exactly. And that's one of the things I love about the field too. We talked about continuous learning earlier. You will never know everything. So there's always something to investigate.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. We'll never be done. We'll still be talking when we're 80 years old and we're still mentoring the 20-year-olds of the world. That could be fun. You know, I really wanted to thank you for being on this podcast because you have a vision. And again, that experience, that perspective, the drive to really enable change, to really change the language, change the process, change the whole concept about the talent gap and human resource management in cybersecurity. And again, with that purpose, the meaning to be impactful in the individual lives of the people that we touch, but then also, you know, national security to bring it all together and, you know, to keep in mind what this is all about. We're here to try to keep the lights on.
Fundamentally, I want us to win. You know, I'll be honest, right? Like as a national special, I want us to win. And that's a very easy motivator for me.
I like that. Absolutely. Let's be winners. I wish you nothing but unbridled success in this role, in this endeavor of yours. I think it's a very ambitious endeavor, but I think it's so important. And I really hope that people recognize this as an important role and hopefully they will hire you and they will leverage all that experience and insight and make their organization and beyond more resilient. So thank you for being the trailblazer because you're really kind of completely changing the script here and dedicating your time and energy on this bigger cause, but then also on the investment in women and the educational system and the veterans. Like, it's just amazing how much you are doing. So really wanted to thank you to share all of that with us.
Yeah, no, I appreciate your support. You've been an amazing kind of person to bounce ideas off of. And so thank you for being such an enabler within the community and such a source of support and hope.
Thank you very much. Let's go win.
Yeah, let's go win.
Thank you.
Get some. On the real, we appear to get gone. Victory is ours. Bring the chip home. Galactic, and I'm looking to get more. Raise it up. Seen what you don't know. Running like the blood, pumping from the pressure of adrenaline rush. We crush whatever we touch. Where you been, y'all? Everyone know. And if you still don't get it, let it chill for a minute. Time is money, and trust me, man, I'm on business. And if you want something done, do yourself to get it finished. Wake up, victory's mine. On top, still on the grind. Gotta go get it right now. Holla at me if you're with me. It's time. Take all we got, we gon' make it. Show the world that I shine in our greatness. Keep it real, never gon' fake this. Till we make it. Taking off, flying high like a spaceship. Take control, take a shot, what you waiting for? Keep it real, never gon' fake this. Till we make it. Second verse, I'm telling you I'm ready to go, letting you know, cause I'm never alone. The ones that I roll with are incredibly known for getting down to the nitty gritty. If you're really with me, let's go. Moves made, dues paid, most talk but don't do a thing. We certified, observe as I come through and give a true display. We champions, understand me, standing under a victory canopy. Canopy the enemy was hitting keys, ready to drive at top speed. Let's get it out. Wake up, victory's mine. Home top, still on the grind. Gotta go get it right now. Holla at me if you're with me. It's time.
I take the signs above. I know that we're gonna make it.
It'll take all we got, we gon' make it. Show the world that I shine in our greatness. Keep it real, never gon' fake this. Till we make it, till we make it. Taking off, flying high like a spaceship. Take control, take a shot, what you waiting for? Keep it real, never gon' fake this. Till we make it, till we make it.
I thank the stars above. I know that we're gon' make it. I know.
Show the world that I shine in our greatness. Keep it real, never gon' fake this. Till we make it, till we make it. Taking off, flying high like a spaceship. Take control, take a shot, what you waiting for? Keep it real, never gon' fake this. Till we make it, till we make it. It'll take all we got, we gon' make it. Keep it real, never gon' fake this. Taking off, flying high like a spaceship. Take control, take a shot, what you waiting for? Keep it real, never gon' fake this. Till we make it, till we make it.